This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
20 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Producer Chris Curry.
A little
trying
poison?
To keep us in line. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction for all your real estate needs. Come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at ZappiaGroup.com. As we mentioned, Jets 41 games into the season, 41 games to go. The schedule for the Jets, it's not an easy one as you go forward at this point in time. They have the third hardest remaining schedule based on opponent's strength of schedule, based on their points percentage of all the teams in the NHL. So if the Jets are to be a playoff team, they're certainly going to have earned it playing a difficult schedule. Let me ask you guys this as we sit here. On the 4th of January, the Jets with a 22-16-3 record. How many wins in their next 41 games are the Jets going to need to be a playoff team come the end of the regular season?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a good question because, you know, we talked about it earlier in the show. The Minnesota Wild are right behind you, only 4 points behind you. Mm-hmm. The Nashville Predators have fallen off a little bit, but they do have the games in hand. And, you know, if you're the Jets right now, you're not really liking the fact that the Dallas Stars have won 4 games in a row. So, you know, you mentioned the 22 wins, the 47 points. I mean, the Jets are probably going to have a very similar record to their first half, right? I mean, you're probably going to need around, 95 to 98 points. That kind of looks like where you're going to have to be, and that's kind of where we expected it to be at the beginning of the season, right, guys? Because, you know, the Central Division could very well have 5 teams in the playoffs, and so I would expect the Jets to probably need, you know, somewhere between, you know, 21, 24 wins. I mean, they're going to have to be slightly above 500, but you know, 500 hockey is not what the Jets have been playing lately. I mean, we talked about, you know, the 3-6-1 in the last 10 games. The Jets are 6-7-2 in their last 15. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Jets have been, you know, below 500 since the beginning of December. You know, after that great November, guys, you know, things have gone a little bit off the tracks here. So the Jets have got to get it going here. They've got to be, you know, at the very least 500, if not a little bit above 500. And I don't think, you know, 500 is the goal, by the way. I don't think, you know, the boys in the dressing room and Paul Maurice are saying, you know, we got to, you know, win 2 out of every 4 games. They obviously would, you know, like to win, you know, 60 to 70% of their games here. But, you know, based on the way things are going in the Central, it's just so close. Like, with the exception of the Anaheim Ducks, the LA Kings, and the San Jose Sharks, like, even the Chicago Blackhawks are in it. Like, I don't think the Blackhawks are going to make the playoffs, but they're only 5 points back. Like, 5 points is not insurmountable. So, you know, I think Nashville is really the team that you want to watch with those games in hand. Mm-hmm. And they do have a bit of an easy schedule coming up. Like, you've got Anaheim and LA coming up. And then obviously you've got the Jets coming up next weekend, Dave. But I would say that, you know, the Jets are going to have to be a little bit above 500 to get in.
Yeah, I would think that you're looking at about 50 points, I think, roughly.
Get 50 points in the next 41 games.
Yeah, to try and get 50 to, you know, like, get just around that 100-point mark. I think that's probably going to be sufficient. So, I mean, it doesn't have to necessarily be 25 wins. You can obviously have some OT losses and shootout losses. Obviously not ideal. You'd like to win all your games. But I think that, you know, if you can, especially in light of everything that's happened, with the patchworkness of the defense, with the injuries that you've sustained to the forwards, if you can start to get Andrew Kopp back, if Sammy Niku can start to make contributions, if Dmitry Kulikov can come in and be, you know,
solidifying something, force.
That's right. If that's the case, if you have used what you've gotten, if you've extracted every piece of, you know, usefulness out of some of these guys that you've been able to, and now you can start to inject these players back into the lineup, and we don't know what's going to happen with Brian Little. He's right now indefinite, and we don't know what's going to happen with Dustin Byfuglien. But, I mean, again, those guys could be some, quote, big trade deadline acquisitions for your team where you don't even have to lose an asset in order to, you know, gain back some significant pieces, add some depth to your roster. So to me, you know, the Jets have done admirably, a lot of that because of what Connor Hellebuyck has been able to do in net for them. But because of where they've positioned themselves, if they can get some pieces back and healthy, and if they can, you know, continue or exceed what they've been able to do to the midway point, I mean, I can see this team being a playoff team.
You know, and guys, it's it's a good position in the sense that the Jets aren't coming from behind like a team like Nashville, right? Like Nashville,
you're not chasing.
Exactly. Nashville's been chasing the whole year. San Jose, you know, 3 weeks ago, I was wrong. Like San Jose's done. Mm-hmm. I mean, and if you think 500, like, you know, isn't that good to get you into the playoffs, like look at, you know, Edmonton. I mean, mm-hmm. Edmonton's been below 500. Now that's the reason why they're in a wild card spot. You remember, it wasn't too long ago, guys, the Oilers were first in the Pacific.
Yeah, they've fallen on hard
now,
times.
Now Vegas and Arizona have taken over. Obviously, you know, Taylor Hall helps a little bit there in Arizona, but you know, you got to be 500, but 500 should be able to get you in because you were so good in November and you were 6 or 7 games above 500. And like we said before, you know, the Jets want to be better than 500, but, you know, Dave mentioned 50 points. 50 points in 41 games, you're talking, you know, 22 to 24 wins.
Last year, it was the Colorado Avalanche. They were the final playoff team out of the West. 90 points is what got the Avalanche in. Is it going to be higher or lower than 90 points to make the playoffs out of the West this season, do you think?
It's definitely going to be more than that in the Central.
Well, sure. I mean, the Central, if you want to be a top three team in the Central, certainly. But
it should be a little bit more, I think. I mean, it's tough to say exactly, but it looks like it'll be more.
I think it'll be 95 probably.
Yeah, I was going to say somewhere around 92 to 95. And, it's just so tight right now, and it doesn't look like there's going to be that much separation. And even the St. Louis Blues, I would expect to come down to earth a little bit. Like, how long can they keep this going? Colorado obviously has come down to earth a little bit, and now they've started to play a little bit better. But I don't expect anybody to catch St. Louis, but I think it's going to be probably around 95 points.
It's just so interesting, the disparity. You look at St. Louis in first place in the West, the Central, yeah, with 58 points. Fifth place, Minnesota, is 43 points. So there's obviously 15-point difference. And in the Pacific,
St. Louis is running away with it right now.
No, but what I'm saying is it's interesting because in the Pacific, Vegas is in first place with 52 points, and in fifth place, Calgary is 47 points. So there's only a 5-point differential. So the Pacific is, like, very tight. Obviously, Central, within the means of what the Jets are looking at, is tight. But I'm just saying, like, the disparity between first and fifth is quite significant.
It just goes to show how good the St. Louis Blues have been this year.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, since January 1st last year, the St. Louis Blues have been an absolutely dominant hockey team. It'll be interesting. 41 games to go, 41 down. It starts this afternoon in St. Paul, Minnesota, as the Jets and the Wild will do battle. A game, of course, you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. It's brought to you as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. And when we return, we'll talk about Kevin Cheveldayoff and his quote-unquote state of the Jets interviews that occurred on the last road trip. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
With any injury, obviously, a little while ago now, and he's progressed to the stage of where he has rehab. He's, you know, rehabbing at an outside clinic, you know, not directly affiliated, you know, with the Jets. His status is, you know, still the same. But, you know, like I guess with any injury, obviously, or surgery, the next phase is rehab, and, you know, we'll see how that goes, I guess. But really, it's not, you know, necessarily being directed, you know, by us. It's more, you know, by him, and we'll see how the process unfolds.
That's Winnipeg Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff in conversation with the guys on the Ground Control podcast, the Winnipeg Jets in-house podcast. Jamie Thomas and the boys do a great job with that. And they had Kevin Cheveldayoff on earlier in the week to talk about all the news and audio and rumors and rumblings surrounding the Winnipeg Jets. Kevin Cheveldayoff also met with the assembled media who are on that road trip through St. Louis and Denver. And
Scott, Mike,
and Ken. Yes, exactly right. And, you know, some interesting tips.
Is that the new three-headed monster?
Scott, Mike, and Ken?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Maybe it is, if you want to call them that.
There's only one three-headed monster.
That's right. It's the Bayak, Munns, and Edmonds. And I guess I think Dennis is on TV this afternoon for the broadcast. For
I was texting with Dennis in the Czech Republic.
Oh, yeah? How was he enjoying?
Humble brag.
Did he enjoy some goulash? What do you eat in the Czech Republic? I don't know.
I'm not really sure.
Why is it schnitzel?
I don't know.
Okay.
Well, Austria, like when he had Mark Masters on, schnitzel.
Yeah, he wasn't in the Czech Republic then. He was in a different country. It was at the pre-tournament when we had him on.
No, he was in the Czech Republic.
No.
And then he was in Austria.
No, he was in Austria first and then to the Czech Republic.
I'm pretty sure he was in the Czech Republic.
I wasn't on that
show. The Czech Republic.
In any event, let's talk about Kevin Cheveldayoff's recent meetings with the media. You know, for me, you know, I didn't take this overwhelming sense of positivity out of the Dustin Byfuglien comments. I thought that Kevin did what Kevin has been known to do and sort of walk around the answer or use a lot of words in trying to answer a question. But, you know, again, the absence of a yes, of course we would welcome him back, just that sort of simple sentence, to me speaks volumes. And maybe I'm reading more into it, and that's certainly entirely the possibility. But to me, if you want Dustin Byfuglien back, or if you're going to embrace him in your locker room and welcome him back with open arms, I think that's the one line that you have to have in the answer that wasn't there from my perspective.
Yeah, fair enough. But how do you welcome him back if you don't know that he wants to be back?
It doesn't matter. If he doesn't want to come back, it's a moot point.
Well, exactly. So then...
So you just say, of course we'll welcome him back.
No, but what I'm saying is I don't think we know whether he wants to come back. So what could have Chevy have said? Like, you're looking for just to be appeased.
I'm not looking to be appeased. I'm looking to...
Yeah, you're kind of looking to be appeased.
Like, if Chevy says, yes, we would welcome him back. What if Buff doesn't want to come back?
Well, then it's a moot point. It's obviously
exactly,
but it's obviously up to Byfuglien if he wants to come back or not.
What I'm saying is that's what matters. What Chevy says doesn't matter at all.
Why don't you just say yes then? Of course we want him back. If it doesn't matter, because I agree with you.
Well, I can't answer that. I mean, Chevy is the one who answered the questions. Right. All I'm saying is I wasn't expecting anything. I wasn't expecting him to say what you wanted him to say.
I don't want him to say anything. It doesn't matter to me. I just think from making his life easier from a perspective of not stirring, not rocking the boat or anything, answer the question with, yes, of course we would welcome him back. Then you can go on your longer answer about, you know, him needing to want to play and needing to be in game shape and everything else. It just seems like he forgot that first part of the sentence from my perspective in terms of making his life a little bit easier, Dave.
And that's fair because, you know, in Ken Weber, the Athletic, who transcribed it, said, here's the quote about whether Dustin Byfuglien would be welcomed back by the Jets when he's healthy. And that's when, if that's the question.
That's the question. Will he be welcomed
back?
Will
he be welcomed
back?
Yes, of course. And then, yeah.
Blah, 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 I think, again, we are reading too much into this.
Oh, no, I'm just saying.
No, I'm not saying you. I'm saying all of us. Simply put, we do not know if Buff is coming back or wants to come back. Do you agree with that?
Yes. It's a decision that's
Dustin Byfuglien. So what are we talking about? If Buff isn't talking to us, if Buff isn't talking to the media, my point is, what does it matter what anybody says? The doctors, Chevy, me, you, Huss, Rick, like, that's what I'm saying. My point is, we need to know if Dustin Byfuglien is coming back, wants to come back, not what anybody else, including Kevin Cheveldayoff, has to say.
To Ezzie's point, that's what Kevin Cheveldayoff is essentially saying. Right. He's essentially saying, look, I mean, just to parse quickly through the words of what because there are a lot of them, of what Ken transcribed. Essentially saying, though, that Cheveldayoff said that, look, Byfuglien was a big part of what we had planned for this season.
Yeah.
But as a result of, you know, what happened, it has to be on him. You know, he hasn't played a lot of hockey, and now it's on him. And he used Line A and Connor missing training camp and having to kind of get, you know, use really the first month of the season to kind of get themselves going as an example as to what Byfuglien is going to have to do. So... he didn't answer it in the way, Drew, you may have wanted him to do it. And I agree he could have made it a little bit easier on himself by saying, of course he would be welcome back. We need him to, you know, want to be back and do all these things.
Yeah.
He, you know, sure, and maybe it was an oversight. Maybe it wasn't. You never know.
I think Drew is right. I think as a fan, you want to hear, yes, we would absolutely welcome him back. I agree with you, but my whole point is I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm disagreeing about, not disagreeing, but I guess I'm just making a comment or giving you guys my opinion on what I think about this situation, because whether it's TSN's Bob McKenzie or Darren Dreger, you know, who have been covering this since the beginning, there's still so much uncertainty about if there is a timeline at all for him to come back. So that's what I'm saying. Like, to me, that's all I really care about.
Sure.
And that's all I'm saying. Like, because right now we just don't know. Like, is Buff going to be traded? I don't know. Like, is he coming back? Is he going to retire? Like, Buff himself hasn't spoken yet.
I may have to hit Lake Winnipeg to find out.
Yeah, go away.
And I'm willing to do that for the Legal Curve Hockey Show.
You're going to scout out all the ice fishing locations?
I'll do what I got to do.
I mean,
what
this
about
is,
Cheveldayoff's comments of moving off Byfuglien?
Because, sure.
Again, I mean,
you don't
a
get
lot
bogged.
Of
thank
unknowns.
You, yeah. Thank you.
What about his comments about Paul Maurice and his future as Winnipeg Jets head coach? What did you think about the comments there where he, you know, praises Maurice and says, you know, he's a good coach and he's, you know, and
he doesn't talk about contracts, though. That's the whole, I mean, look, yeah. We've had him on the show before where we've asked him and we've, you know, you try and nuance it so he doesn't have to add answer it specifically.
And he knows it's coming, but he can't answer it.
He just, well, he, no, I mean, he could, obviously, but the fact is that he chooses not to, and that's just, and that's his policy.
Well, I was talking more about the future, like the whole, you know, idea of Seattle and all that.
I think Paul Maurice is the right coach for this organization. This is the quote from Cheveldayoff.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think he's done a good job moving forward. Not sure what how past tense and future tense work there, but whatever. What happens in the future, that'll be done behind the scenes, and at some point you'll all know. Well, yeah, of course that. I mean, that's just... I mean, there's nothing in there.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing there.
You know, we talked about this a few weeks back, you know, the topic of, you know, Paul Maurice's contract status. And that's something, again, that, you know, maybe Chevy could, you know, he could choose his words differently. But again, you know, he is the one who says what he says, right? So we can pick it apart and you know, want more from Chevy or want him to say different things. But... guys, Chevy is someone who keeps his cards close to his chest. I mean, they have their own plan. They know what's going on internally. And, you know, the way he deals with the media, he has his own style. So I'm not at all surprised with anything that he said or didn't say. But there is a lot of uncertainty when you talk about, you know, Buff, whether he's going to come back and, you know, whether Paul Maurice is going to come back. Because, you know, you bring up a valid point, Drew. Like, is Paul Maurice... the coach next year? Does it depend on how far this team goes in the playoffs? Do they even make the playoffs? Or does Paul Maurice maybe want to go on to Seattle and be reunited with his old friend, Ron Francis?
It seems clear to me at this point that Maurice gets a contract extension if and only if the Jets, A, make the playoffs, and B, maybe make a win a round in the playoffs. It seems, I mean, and I could be reading too much into it, but in the absence of any definitives, that's what we have to do is,
right.
You know, when there's no answers provided and there's no real, explanation provided, you have to sort of read between the lines and you have to parse the words and, you know, it fuels speculation, and that's okay because speculation drives interest and interest is what keeps us on the air. But again, it's the absence of anything that's forthcoming.
There's
nothing concrete. And so as a result, you sort of flip a coin and you say, well, if I'm reading the tea leaves correctly, well, guess what? With tea leaves, you can oftentimes read them incorrectly. And I guess time will tell. But the Jets sort of keep that window of that aura of uncertainty hovering overhead.
You know what they say, Drew? If life gives you tea leaves, you make tea.
I have a serious question. What is a tea leaf?
When we come back, we'll ask Mark Dumont of TheAthletic.com what is a tea leaf and about the Montreal Canadiens, the Jets' opponent on Monday night. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 1290.90. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TheAthletic.com in Montreal, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Mark Dumont. Mark, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us. Happy New Year.
Good morning, guys. How's it going over in Manitoba?
Things are going well over here. It's unseasonably warm, even if the Jets' performance on the ice as of late has not been as hot. But we'll take the warm weather and deal with the hockey team, which, of course, is also out of our control. How are things in Montreal? Well,
yeah, is that what the Jets fans would say, or is that what you guys are saying?
That's what I'm saying. I'm enjoying the warm weather. The Jets fans might be more apoplectic than I am, but I can only control the weather, so I'm going to keep... I control it as best as I can.
Perfect. Well, it's the same thing here in Montreal. You know, we can see some sidewalks there. So, but the team is also a little, contrary to the weather, they're quite frigid right now. But things are exciting in Montreal. Things are, there's some stuff happening. I don't know quite how to describe it, but stuff is happening.
There you go. I appreciate that. Mark, and obviously, you know, part of the problems or the struggles for the Montreal Canadiens as of late is the injury bug. Just absolutely up and down the forward group. Just Brendan Gallagher also now on the IR with a concussion. It just, you know, it seems like it's just snowballing out of control when it comes to the injuries. How are they dealing with this injury problem? We know that they obviously signed Ilya Kovalchuk to that contract, but that's more of a stab in the dark than anything else, it seems like, at this point in his career. But how are the Habs handling the injury bug that is afflicting them?
I think we have to be careful with using this injury bug excuse, because losing Brendan Gallagher is huge. I mean, the Montreal Canadiens, they play a very tight system, and there are very few players that can score goals, or as I describe, as natural finishers. Now, Brendan Gallagher scores even strength goals with the best of them. You know, he's got a 5-on-5 goal scoring rate that's the same as Ovechkin over the last 3 years, and you heard me right. But they lost him for a couple of games. Before that, they lost him at Tampa Wang, who was in their top six. Don't get me wrong, but this is the same guy a lot of people wrote off last year. Paul Byron was on the fourth line. Yoel Armia was on the third line. So more than anything, I really feel like this is a symptom of a team that had to play as an entire unit and couldn't afford to lose anyone rather than, you know, losing a few key players. Because, if you look at other teams have lost better players, other teams have lost more players. But the Montreal Canadiens just simply could not afford to lose these players. And they're a team that lack game breakers, right, guys? You look at that lineup. No one's going to blow the game up. No one's going to, blow through three zones and score. So they've been dealing with it poorly, but I think that's just a symptom of maybe a lack of depth and maybe a lack of high-end talent.
Mark, the Montreal Canadiens, of course, host the Pittsburgh Penguins tonight. We talked about Ilya Kovalchuk earlier. We got to talk more about Kovalchuk. It's a one-year deal. It's a two-way deal. It's obviously less than $1 million. He was bought out by the LA Kings, so money is not a factor for him. What's your take on the Kovalchuk signing? Because obviously, it's not the same Kovalchuk from, 5 or 6 years ago when he was tearing it up with the Devils. How soon can we expect Kovalchuk to be in the lineup, and what's a realistic role for him?
It's funny because you say it's a one-year deal. It might end up being a two-week deal. Really, the approach in Montreal is that this is a Band-Aid, and there's no hiding it. You're not going to invest much in a team that has about 11% chance of making the playoffs, right? But you have to throw the fans a bone. You have to. They've been waiting half a decade for some playoff success that hasn't come, so you have to do something. On that note, I see Kovalchuk as purely a power play specialist at this point in his career. He still has a shot, right? When we look at it, his numbers with the Kings weren't that bad. About 20 goals and, 30 assists in 80 games, or maybe 25 assists. You're looking at about a 40-point guy. That's not the worst thing in the world, especially these days in the NHL. It's rather tough to get 40 points. So on that note, I'm expecting a little bit of offense, not a whole lot. But really, he's going to provide a shooting presence on the power play, and maybe he'll sign a few autographs for some of the young kids. Because you're looking at guys like Suzuki and Paling, and guys that kind of grew up, playing Kovalchuk on NHL, whatever edition they had. So that'll be interesting. But listen, guys, we have to be realistic here. Ilya Kovalchuk is no longer an elite player. I think he's a serviceable player. And when it comes down to it, for the amount of money they paid, you don't get much better value than that. But again, they didn't pay very much money. So I think that goes to say that you're not going to expect a ton of offense from Ilya Kovalchuk.
You know, Mark, they say you can't ever go home again, but don't tell that to Marco Scandella. He's back home in Montreal after they swung a trade to acquire him. The nephew of former Canadiens player Sergio Mamesso. What does it mean for him to get back in Montreal, and what are the Canadiens hoping that he'll be able to provide to their team?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because the Canadiens have been after Marco Scandella since, I think, 2017 was when the Wild put him on the trade market. Now, at the time, the price was way too high. The Canadiens essentially leveraged Mike Riley into Marco Scandella. They dropped a few spots in the draft, but, when it comes to asset management, that's a clear upgrade. Montreal natives, it's always an interesting thing when they get here because obviously they're going to say they love it. Now, whether they do or not, deep down inside, there's always that added pressure. But, people are happy to see Marco Scandella here. There's a lot of family members that are happy to see him here. And I think he's going to be a really good solidifying presence on the blue line for the Canadiens. He's got some size, but he's also mobile. So this is the type of trade I would have loved to see the Canadiens do in the offseason. It feels a little late now. But you're dealing with the trade freeze. It essentially was a four-team trade because you had to get the Flames, the Sabres, and the Senators involved. So that takes some time. And, overall, very good trade. Just the timing's a bit off. On that note, he woke up in his condo after a long drive from Buffalo. And let me tell you guys, waking up at home as opposed to a hotel makes the world of difference for an athlete. So I'm sure he'll enjoy his time here in Montreal, however brief or long it may be.
Mark Dumont is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN Radio 1290. The Jets are into St. Paul, Minnesota to face the Wild this afternoon before they head to Montreal to face the Habs on Monday night. Mark, you know, Carey Price's numbers aren't, you know, quote-unquote Carey Price-esque. You know, a 901 save percentage this season, a 3.00 goals against average. Is it a function of the players in front of him, or is it a function of, you know, Carey Price maybe not being quite as dominant of a goaltender as we necessarily expect him to be at this stage in his career?
Yes, that's my answer to that one, yeah. You know what's interesting, because I feel like the Jets and the Habs are essentially in the same type of situation where things haven't been going well, but one team has been more or less saved by their goaltender, and the other one slightly let down by their goaltender. Now, on that note, I look at analysts that take a look at the Canadiens and say, hey, they lead the league in shots for, and they don't give that many shots against. And I'm an analyst as well, but I review every single game, and I see the amount of odd man rushes, two-on-ones, breakaways that the Montreal Canadiens give up. They're not just giving up numbers. They're giving up quality chances. So Carey Price has not been great, guys. He's been mediocre, full stop. The Montreal Canadiens' defense has also been quite poor. So I feel like goaltending is almost always a symptom of the defensive structure. In this case, Carey Price, yeah, I have to admit, he's allowed a lot of goals, that, and he hasn't looked like himself. But, you know, it's all intertwined, right, guys? If you have a really good goaltender, usually it's because of a good defensive system, and vice versa. So what's the issue here is that fans and coaching and the management in Montreal are used to Carey Price saving their bacon. It's not happening this year, so you can't expect him to do it, but it, you know, to a certain extent, he's making a fair amount of money, and his performance has been disappointing.
You know, Mark, I wanted to go back to the defense. We, you know, we talk about, you know, Marco Scandella, a player that, you know, the Habs have been after for a couple of years, and, you know, Ben Sherratt has been talked a lot about this year in Winnipeg, just because how well he's played on that top pair with Shea Weber. But now on that left side, you've got Sherratt, Victor Mete, and Marco Scandella. I'm not sure how Brett Kulak figures in now, because he's a guy that's been, I think you'd admit, he's been a pretty solid defenseman for the Habs this year. But is that left side now much more of a position of strength for the Habs? The right side, you know, with Shea Weber and Jeff Petrie, obviously, has been considered more of a strength. And do you expect, as a follow-up question, a guy like Scandella will maybe be a guy that the Habs re-sign after this year?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of that will have to do whether or not Scandella wants to re-sign here. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. The left side has been a significant area of weakness. Now, not to anger Jets fans anymore, but I'd go as far as saying, as Ben Sherratt, arguably, and I know Shea Weber is going to the All-Star game, and he's got the point, but if we look at a defenseman's overall game, we have to include the defensive aspect here, and Ben Sherratt has not been weak offensively. He isn't scoring goals like he's a sniper out there. I don't know if that's something that happened in Winnipeg, but Sherratt's joining the play, and he's sniping him. And defensively, I think he's been the most solid defenseman for the Canadiens. So all around, I'd say Ben Sherratt has been their best defenseman. His pairing with Shea Weber, it's the first pairing now, and it's Weber is the one that's been struggling a little on the defensive side of things. So he's been just a fantastic stabilizing presence. And I'd even go as far as saying, maybe not on Montreal radio, but this is Winnipeg radio, so I'm super far away from Montreal, and they'll never hear it. But I go as far as saying that because of Sherratt, I'd almost start to look at the right side and say, what do you do with Weber and Petrie here? Because you can't move them around. Those are your two mainstays on the right. But you continuously try to upgrade your defense and nothing's happening. So maybe you have to start looking at moving at one of those two, especially if you're not going to compete. And let's be honest, they're probably not going to make the playoffs. Signing Scandella would be great. But until that happens, then you have to figure out Kulak. I think he had a great year last year, struggled a bit this year. But you have to figure out where you're going long-term. So before you figure out the left side, I think you have to reevaluate the right side with guys like Weber and Petrie, because regardless of their age, I think they can fetch a pretty decent return. So if you're not going to compete, you're going to have to start looking at moving some of those guys.
You know, Mark, Nick Suzuki was one of the key pieces of that acquisition when they made the trade with Vegas. Vegas selected him 13th overall. I believe Mark Bergevin said he was going to be, they had him evaluated as about the 11th overall pick. How has he been overall so far in his first NHL season?
I think Nick Suzuki has been the most pleasant surprise in Montreal, like by far, guys. And is just his intelligence. He anticipates the play. Like when you close your eyes and try to forget everything about what you know about these players on the ice, Suzuki won't necessarily stand out as a guy that maybe has elite skills. But when you start watching him, you realize that he's brilliant in all three zones. So whether it's stopping the rush and converting into attack, or smart positioning in the defensive zone, and obviously creativity in the offensive zone, Suzuki seems to have it all. So he's about 40 games into his pro career, on pace for 40 points. He's been a tremendous surprise in the sense that he's been playing on the power play, a bit of penalty kill, and there's been almost no weakness to his game. So all in all, Nick Suzuki has been just a great silver lining for the Montreal Canadiens this season. And I mean, people were talking about, oh, are we ruining his development? He's playing on the fourth line. Well, he's in the top six now, and I think you'd be hard-pressed to argue that he doesn't deserve to be there. So if not for the fact that the Gallagher, Danault, Tatar trio is essentially Montreal's best line and they're the rock, I think we would have even seen Suzuki on the top line by now. So he's been, honestly, guys, a fantastic story for the Montreal Canadiens.
Mark, last question for you. Mark Dumont of TheAthletic.com is our guest talking about the Montreal Canadiens. If the season continues to go the way it appears and the Habs miss the playoffs, who's more on the hot seat, Marc Bergevin or head coach Claude Julien?
I would say neither or neither or nor or
any of the above.
Yeah, exactly. Here's what it is, guys. If you were going to fire Marc Bergevin, you would have done it 4 years ago or 2 years ago. At this point, I think he's executing Jeff Molson's plan, and they were hoping for playoffs this year. But what they say publicly and what they think is two different things. Everything had to go right for them to make the playoffs this year, and they're really banking on the future. So the other question becomes, who replaces them? Habs fans will be quick to point to Julien Brisebois, but he's quite happy in Tampa Bay, and they got rid of Steve Yzerman to make place for him. So I don't think Tampa Bay is going to give him up. So there's no really good alternative target, keeping in mind that it has to be a Francophone. We can get into that into a whole other show, but we don't have time for tonight. And as for coaching, again, I don't think that's the issue. I think Claude Julien has done a really good job holding this team together with a lack of superstars, a lack of depth, and a lack of talent. So unfortunately, even though the season is kind of crumbling, I would say that you can't point fingers to either. Well, you can point fingers, but you can't expect either one to go. If there was one more than the other, I'd say probably the coach. But by next season, I fully expect both will be back in charge, and it will anger a fair amount of Habs fans. But, they have a project here in mind, and they're not going to let another, even though this is going to be the worst run in Montreal Canadiens history for missing the playoffs. And that used to spell doom for Montreal. But what Marc Bergevin has done is he's lowered the standards here. And they're gonna see this through, whether fans like it or not. But I have to say, fans don't like it. They're starting to not show up at games. The Canadiens do have a lot of high ticket sales, but that sellout streak ended, and it's not going to start back up anytime soon.
Mark Dumont covers the Montreal Canadiens for TheAthletic.com. Mark, always appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll do it again real soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for having me. Talk to you soon.
Take care, Mark. Thanks again. When we come back, we discuss John Tortorella's rant against the NHL, the officials, and the off-ice crew. It's an entertaining Tortorella rant. Was he right? We'll talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. The Jets in the Wild this afternoon, a 1 p.m. puck drop on this fine radio station. This segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, he's been playing to sold-out shows. Rob Pugh in town. Get your tickets now for Rob or any of the upcoming acts at rumorscomedyclub.com. One of the best comedians in the world is actually Columbus Blue Jackets head coach John Tortorella. Here's what he had to say earlier this week regarding NHL officiating.
So the whistle blows. The whistle is
blown at 19.2 on the clock. For some reason, the clock has run down a second and a tenth to 18.1. For whatever reason, I have no idea. So instead of resetting the clock, we have them tell our captain we're not going to do it. Toronto doesn't step in. Refs don't do their freaking job. And now we lose the game and we lose our goalie. So the chain of events, if it was done right, we don't lose our goalie, we win the hockey game. So all this god technology, right? The technology and getting things right, the stubbornness tonight by the officials and by the league and Toronto, however it's supposed to work, screws us. It's ridiculous. I'm not taking any god.
That was John Tortorella. So in case you're just joining us, what happened was...
That wasn't one of us.
It wasn't. The game is in overtime between in the Blue Jackets game against... I'm trying to remember who they played. It doesn't even matter.
Chicago.
The Blackhawks. Pardon me, the Blackhawks. The game goes to overtime. Blackhawks are whistled for a penalty with, as he said, 19.2 seconds to go. The clock ticks down 2 seconds. The Blue Jackets score, but it's just after the buzzer. Because they didn't reset the clock, the goal doesn't count. The game goes to a shootout, and in the shootout, Korpisalo gets injured. He's out 4 to 6 weeks with a torn meniscus, and the Blue Jackets lose in the shootout. So they lose the game, they lose their goalie, but we all win for the Tortorella rant. Is he right? Did the NHL screw up in how they manage the game? Because we see it all the time, where the officials, late in the game, they will review the clock to make sure a tenth of a second or five-tenths of a second or 2 seconds don't tick off. In this instance, for whatever reason, they don't, even though it's a pretty standard operating procedure. Is Tortorella right in how he in the rant he delivered and obviously was punished for by the NHL?
By the way, before we talk about whether or not Tortorella was right, Dave, can we talk about the fact that the last time Columbus was in a game where they didn't get at least a point was December 7th. The Blue Jackets have got at least a point in 12 straight games and are now only 2 points back of the Flyers for the last playoff spot.
And like, one of the key members of that streak, though, Ezzy, has been Jonas Korpisalo. And, of course, he's now out of the lineup for 4 to 6 weeks.
Well, Merzlikens has been very good in his absence, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's 3 points, pardon me, the Blue Jackets are behind the Flyers. But, Dave, sorry, I cut you off, but... Absolutely, Torts is right. I mean, obviously, the ref's decision to not put time back on the clock, I mean, that's not the reason why Korpisalo got injured, but his point is, well, maybe if the game was over and it didn't go to a shootout, then Korpisalo wouldn't have been injured. So, Tortorella and me have had our little history, going back to my question about, the lack of an assistant coach on the bench, what was that, 6 years ago or whatever? But
what was 9 years ago, so
I believe his response was, what was that?
Yeah.
What
the hell kind of question was that? And obviously I should have known that, at the time the New York Rangers only had one assistant coach. But no, I mean, Torts is great for the media. And, we always love this for our radio show because Torts is one of our favorites. And he's done come on, guys. Columbus is, I think, a story that hasn't been talked about enough. I mean, this team, the fact that, with no Duchesne, no Dzingel, no Panarin, no Bobrovsky.
No Duclair.
No Duclair, who Torts obviously didn't like very much. But the fact that this team, Dave, is in a playoff race is incredible. But yeah, Torts is right. I mean, the refs blew it.
The thing that was disappointing to me was the fact that he had to walk back his comments the next day.
I don't think he should have. I think he should.
I think he shouldn't have either.
I agree with that.
I think just take the fine and don't walk back the comments.
He got fined $20,000 by the NHL
and a $25,000
warning.
Yeah, but
doesn't the team picks that up, right?
Well, I don't think so.
I think the players might chip in for
maybe
that.
Maybe they will. I don't know. It's not important.
You chip in a few shekels.
And,
come on.
And then the NHL says that they've also conditionally fined him $25,000 if he does anything else over the next calendar year.
I think it's a problem. I think the fact of the matter is that
I don't think he should have been fined.
I think that the fact is that nobody is above criticism, and I think that the NHL,
except you, Dave,
thank you, I appreciate that, as but I think the truth is that really the NHL, it makes it about it's a bit of a mockery.
Yes,
the fact that look, admit you made a mistake. Like, again, nobody holds anybody to be infallible. So you're allowed to make mistakes in life. Everybody. It doesn't matter who you are. You can make a mistake. So the fact is, a mistake was made by your referees. You don't like the fact that he aired it. But the fact of the matter is, he's frustrated. He just lost his goaltender. His team is on a run, as he's just detailed. So the fact is, and look, we talk about this all the time. We see with Blake Wheeler after a game, guys are emotional.
Yeah.
And, right after the game, right in the heat of the moment, they say things. They say things that they probably wouldn't say an hour later. So the point is, he didn't say anything that was untrue. He was frustrated. I have zero problem with it. The only thing I have a problem with it was walking it back. I have the only problem I have is the NHL getting into a pissing contest really with him about this and essentially fining him for speaking his mind. What? And you know, you can say you don't like the refs being denigrated. That's your
Nobody
prerogative.
Nobody has any idea who the refs are. They're anonymous. Nobody knows that.
Well, and remember, we've talked about that, how they've switched over to refs used to be.
Have a personality.
And
be
the fact is, refs are not accountable anymore. You know, you can't, not anymore really, you can't talk to refs after games. The NBA, you can't question their decision making.
Yeah, the NBA issues a post-game report regarding the officiating in the last 5 minutes of the game when necessary.
Right.
The NFL, you know who every NFL official is. You know who the side judges are. Because now, that might have something to do with the fact it's the NFL. Major League Baseball, you know who the officials are. Who is the NHL protecting here? I mean, you're not protecting any individual official because you don't know who they are. They were wrong. The league was wrong. And instead, they hand out this $20,000 fine. And the worst part of it is this $25,000 conditional fine. It's so small time. It's so minor league of the league to do so. And I love that it's
more than the players get fined.
It's Colin Campbell handing out the fine. The same Colin Campbell who years ago has been proven to be biased in his interactions with the referees as it pertained to his son, Gregory Campbell. Go Google Colin Campbell and officials if you want more on what I'm saying about. But I'm saying this is the NHL. They're so minor league and they're so small time and they can't get out of their own way, and they make a one-day story into a week-long story because of how incredibly low their self-esteem is as a league, and that they had to hand out this fine when they were 100% in the wrong. When we come back, Marissa Ingemi joins us to talk about the Boston Bruins. The Jets are playing the Bruins later on next week. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose. News and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Boston Herald, she covers the Boston Bruins. We're pleased to welcome to the program Marissa Ingemi. Marissa, good morning and thanks so much for joining us. A happy new year.
Happy new year to you as well. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Marissa obviously brought you on to talk about the Bruins. The Jets are going to make their lone visit of the season to Boston later on this coming week. Lone visit, of course, barring a Stanley Cup final between these two teams. The Bruins have been certainly a juggernaut in the league all season long. They've hit a little bit of a unique rough patch as of late, though. 4-1-5 in their last 10 games. The four wins out of 10 isn't great. Getting those five quote-unquote loser points, well, that makes up for a little bit. How have the Bruins been performing as of late, given the incredible start to the season that they had?
It's kind of unusual because they have a stretch of games in November where they really weren't playing well and they were somehow coming back and pulling out these games. And now it's kind of even out a bit where they, since early December, they have been playing pretty well for the most part and just not getting results. And then more recently, the big issue is giving up third period leads. It happened against the Kings. It happened against the Devils. That happened last game as well. So that's just kind of the problem right now where they have a 1-0, 2-0 lead late, or a 1-goal lead, 2-goal lead late. And then they're going to overtime or the shootout. They're 0-6 in the shootout. They're having a heck of a time in overtime on the 3-on-3, just a lot of breakdowns there. The good news for them is they don't have to worry about that in the playoffs. If that's their biggest flaw, then they're in pretty good shape. But right now, that's really what's been killing them is the overtime and the shootout.
Marissa, I wanted to ask you about Charlie Coyle. Obviously, you know, in Winnipeg, being a former member of the Minnesota Wild, we know him really well. And you know, after he was acquired by the Bruins, as you know, he was a big part of that playoff run to the Stanley Cup final. But you know, he started to play a little bit better lately, but he struggled at times offensively. In your opinion, kind of what's been the difference, or maybe why he hasn't kind of picked up where he left off in last year's playoffs?
They're just shuffling him around the lineup a lot. In an ideal world, and they'll say this too, he's their third line center. He drives that line. He worked really well with Anders Bjork, who's up kind of in a third attempt at the NHL now. And when those two have been on the same line together, they've had really good chemistry. When they've had Dan Tynan on the right side to make up a third line in an ideal world, it's been really good. And I don't think anyone's complaining about how hard Coyle plays or what he brings. But then they move him up to the second line right wing, which is where they're at right now just because of injuries and performance and moving guys in and out of the lineup. And then he's just not a winger in defense of, he's not a shoot-first type of guy, and they'll get frustrated when he passes up open looks. That's happened a couple of times. So if they could get him consistently playing that third-line center role for a month straight, more than a month straight, I think that his offensive game would really start to come around if he can play in a situation where he's the most comfortable.
Marissa, for the last four seasons, David Pastrnak has been in the 30-goal range, 34, 35, 38. But now he's already got 30 in 42 games. What is going right for him? Because, I mean, he's having obviously a phenomenal season. And do you think 50, 60 goals is out of the question for him?
I mean, just doing the math, it's not out of the question at all. And he's playing well. He's actually kind of hit more of a it seems like he slowed down a bit from early on in the season where he was scoring a hat trick and two goals per game. But still, he's an offensive force. And I think what's just going right for him is he's only 23 years old, and it's his sixth NHL season, and he's just getting better. And he's playing on a line with Patrice Bergeron, who right now is on pace to hit some offensive career highs, which has been kind of a little quiet maybe. And he's playing on a line with Brad Marchand, who scored 100 points last year. So just that trio being there and how dominant the power play has been all season, I think going into today's game, they have the third best power play in the league, and Pastrnak is a really big reason why. So I think we're just really seeing him grow into the player of who he is, and there's no reason to believe he's going to slow down in the second half of the season.
Marissa Ingemmi is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Marissa covers the Boston Bruins for the Boston Herald. The Jets are into Boston next Thursday to meet the Bruins. Marissa, Torrey Krug, you know, very solid year, you know, especially for a defenseman, 27 points in 34 games played thus far. He's an unrestricted free agent at season's end. Are you surprised that it's got to this point in time where the Bruins, you know, not that they have this dangling over their heads, but this is a key member of their defense who's potentially going to walk for nothing at season's end?
They have some cap things they have to do, and they just I'm a little surprised only because they signed Coyle and Wagner to their extension before they got to Krug, and that just surprised me just a little bit. I think they do get something worked out with Krug before free agency, and I think he probably returns to Boston even if he does go to free agency. I am a little surprised there's kind of been nothing. There's been no word for quite a bit now, and I know he was looking to not have the distraction. He used the term way early in the season, and now we're into January, and there's really been nothing. I think something does get done with him. But it's a little surprising to see that there's really kind of been no headway right now. But heading into what will be the off season at some point, I think that they'll get something done eventually. I think he's too good of a fit in Boston. I think that he runs that entire power play, which, like I mentioned earlier, has really been the strength of the team. And while Mac Grizzlick's done a really good job going into that defenseman, top of the point power play role when Krug's been out at times, I think that they'll probably do whatever they can to keep him. But it's just about the cap flexibility and trying to move some guys and make sure it can happen. They have a lot of defensemen, and it might just be a matter of seeing whose contracts are up and who they let go.
Chris, I wanted to ask you about Noel Achari. Obviously, you know, left the Bruins and signed the contract with the Panthers. I think it was a four-year contract or a three-year contract. He's got 14 goals. He's actually going for the Cy Young with a 14-3 record right now. But he had the back-to-back hat tricks. He was obviously a big part of that fourth line, that run to the Stanley Cup final last year against the St. Louis Blues. But what's kind of the, you know, the word in Boston? I think most fans probably would accept the fact that, you know, he got the contract and moved on to Florida, but just the fact that he's having that career year, and just it seems like everything he shoots goes in for Florida this year.
Yeah, it's just kind of wild what's going on there. I think I saw something the other day, like he had the fourth most goals out of Bruins forwards if he was still on the team. And I don't think anyone here is overreacting or complaining that he didn't re-sign him, because Florida paid him a lot more than the Bruins were willing to, and frankly got a lot more than I expected that he would on the open market. So it's more a good for him and good for Florida thing. It is kind of ironic just because the Bruins' fourth line in general all had career years last year, with Chris Wagner scoring 12 goals and Sean Corrali breaking out, and kind of a narrative right now with how the fourth line really isn't doing that much. So while Achari is succeeding in Florida, it's kind of ironic how the fourth line in Boston has taken a step back a little bit. But I don't think anyone's overreacting or complaining too heavily that the Bruins didn't retain Achari.
You know, Marissa, it's so important in the NHL, obviously, to have a good starting goaltender and a good back goaltender. It seems like in Boston right now, they've got like a 1A and a 1B with, you know, Tuukka Rask and Yaroslav Halak. Was that kind of the plan going into the season, or is that just the way it's worked? Because right now, Rask played 25 games, Halak has played 17. So is that a function of just the way they planned it, or is it just because they're both been playing very well?
It's definitely planned. They talked about this before the year and even last year to an extent. Rask missed a little bit of time between he had a leave of absence and then had the concussion thing. So it ended up Halak played a little more than they expected last year, but they did sign Halak with the intention of having somewhat of a tandem and having Rask kind of pull away in the second half as the number one. Historically, he's done a lot better late in the year. Rask struggled early in the year over his career as well. So having Halak in there eased Rask into the season and then have him as the number one in the playoffs with the full understanding Halak could step in whenever they need and be more than adequate. I think he's fourth in the league in goals against average. He's at least top five in that category and in save percentage right now as a backup. And he's had a couple – there have been a couple games where Halak's been exposed a little bit more just because Rask is your typical number one, and in the end, Halak is the backup. But it's been a really good tandem. It's worked out exactly how they've wanted it to go so far. But in the second half, I'd expect Rask to pull away and play a little bit more.
Marissa, I wanted to ask you about Carson Kuhlman. He had that unfortunate leg injury back in October, and now he's back with Providence in the American Hockey League. Are you expecting him to spend a little bit of time there? And could that be similar to a trade deadline acquisition when the Bruins recall him? Because he's another guy, you know, who was effective, you know, when he was playing on that second line, you know, with David Krejci and Jake DeBrusque.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually funny now that guys are coming back from injury. They're going to have to work out some cap flexibility and who's up and who's down and all of that. But they did want to start the year with Kuhlman at the top six forward for a reason. They like the way his speed matches up with Krejci, and they like the way it works with DeBrusque on that second line. He was a bit snake-bitten. He played only eight games before he got hurt. He didn't score a goal. He had one called back in Colorado in the fourth game of the year. He was beating out icing. He was doing a lot of stuff with his speed, and I think showed a lot, and I think last year showed a lot as well. So I'd like to see him get another chance like that. But I think what might be a roadblock potentially is Anders Bjork coming up and playing so well and having the ability to play on the right wing. And right now, why change that? But they do need some guys on the right side. So I think that once Kuhlman is healthy and he plays in Providence, then I think he'll get a shot somewhere in the lineup. I'm not sure if they'll put him back up in that top six now that it's halfway through the season. And he might need to get reacclimated just to the NHL again. But I think getting a guy like him back certainly would be a boost and just give them another option as they kind of try to find in that middle six more than anything some guys who can produce.
Marissa Ingemi is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Marissa covers the Boston Bruins for the Boston Herald. Marissa, we'll let you go on this final question. You mentioned Charlie Coyle. You know, obviously he signed the contract extension earlier in the year. You know, why were the Bruins so eager to get it done? You know, they give him, you know, $5.25 million per season going forward after this year. They acquired him from the Minnesota Wild late in the season last year. Why were they so eager to make sure Coyle's a Bruin, you know, going forward in the future? And why does he fit in so well with the team, assuming that, you know, obviously he has given the contract extension?
Yeah, I just think he's been a tremendously solid fit from day one on. And I'll say this as someone who is an outside observer of Coyle's game until he came to the Bruins. I really didn't know that his game would just fit right in so well. They have some depth there at center now going forward. I mean, Krejci and Bergeron are going to be up at some point. They're older. We don't know what the future is going to be. Is it their last contract with the Bruins? So they have that center depth right there. They have a guy who's versatile and flexible, can move around the lineup. He wanted to be here. He didn't want to go through the whole free agency process. And he's just been really happy since he came to Boston pretty much and returned home, being a local guy. So same with Chris Wagner, too. They signed him to the extension as well at the same exact time. So I think it was just a really good fit pretty much from moment one, and I think that all sides recognized that and just wanted to get it over with.
Marissa Ingemi covers the Boston Bruins for the Boston Herald. Marissa, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks again.
Take care, Marissa. Thanks again. When we come back, we look around the league, NHL news and notes, an interesting tale of goaltending woes coming out of Pittsburgh as well, in addition to an injury to Jake Guentzel. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Wednesday afternoon in Dallas, Stars forward Corey Perry was assessed a major penalty and game misconduct for elbowing Predators defenseman Ryan Ellis. Perry falls through with his elbow, driving it into Ellis's head. This is an elbow directly to the head of an opponent with substantial force. To summarize, this is elbowing. Ellis suffered an injury on the play. Perry has been suspended twice in his 1,022-game NHL career. The Department of Player Safety has suspended Corey Perry for 5 games.
Nice of the NHL to hire a robot to do that reading. I love it.
Are those the Fox robots from like back in the day?
It might be. The old
this
Fox.
Is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I am Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuke. This is a 5-game suspension.
It was a deserving 5-game suspension. It was a pretty brutal hit to the head Corey Perry leveled on Ryan Ellis during the Winter
Perry
Classic.
What is Perry doing? Like, but, I've always been a big fan of Corey Perry. Rick I like Bonus the way he plays, but that's ridiculous.
Rick Bonus says that Corey Perry would never try to hurt another opponent despite the litany of evidence that Corey Perry has deliberately tried to injure opponents on multiple different occasions.
What about the 1 kilometer walk of shame that he did after that?
It was the best.
And this is one of those times where the internet is doing the Lord's work by then setting that 1 kilometer walk of shame to a lot of different hilarious theme songs. Oh. As it was set to the Curb theme song.
Yeah, I saw that.
Just good work by the weird internet people who are adding music to bad videos. But I mean, that's a bad hit. 5 games is, I mean, the minimum that he could have gotten. I think if they go heavier, I'm fine with that. He's going to miss his return date in Anaheim, which is even funnier. Corey Perry's a goon. He's always been a guy who plays right on the edge. He doesn't really provide much offensively anymore.
I don't know if I'd say he's a goon, Drew. He's had a pretty good career.
He's had a very good career, but no, he always played on the edge.
He's a dirty player. He's dirty, not goon.
Not a goon, but he's a dirty player. He's always been a dirty
player. Yes, I would agree with that. You know what the funniest thing is? If you go to auctions.nhl.com, you can buy his game-worn jersey from the Winter Classic.
And apparently it's like up to like over $1,000.
It's at $3,000. And you also have 10 days left to bid on it. So I think it's going to be funny to see how high that goes because he only wore it for 30 seconds.
Yeah, but the truth is, if you can get it signed, that's quite a unique collector's item.
Exactly. The jersey that he didn't wear during the Winter Classic would be an interesting collector's item. Look, 5 games, fine, whatever. It's the NHL. You typically, that's what you expect. A guy who's got I don't know if he's officially a repeat offender, but he's certainly got a history of questionable hits, so he gets what he gets.
Yeah,
for
Corey
that
Perry's
game.
Been fined before, suspended
no,
before.
No, but I mean, but by the rule about being a repeat offender within, having a suspension within the calendar year so that they can consider that a factor, because if it's 5 years ago, they can't consider it a factor, whatever it might be. 5 games for Corey Perry is totally legitimate.
I thought 5 games was fair because I think after that happened, people were saying, yes, he's going to be suspended for probably 2 or 3, maybe 5. Mm-hmm. And I think the NHL went on the higher level of what Perry could be suspended for. Like, that was dirty. And Ryan Ellis is having a good year for Nashville. I've always really liked Ellis's game, but that's the exact type of play that you don't want in hockey.
No, it's the type of hit you've been trying to get rid of, and that's exactly what the league is telling Corey Perry with that. Whole bunch of trades yesterday in the NHL, sort of a little bit of trade roulette. The Montreal, which is better than chat roulette, for the record.
I was thinking, it's funny, when you said that, I thought about that.
The Montreal Canadiens.
Ezzy and I had a few funny chat roulettes.
Montreal Canadiens, not even going there. The Montreal Canadiens acquire a 5th-round pick in exchange for defenseman Mike Riley. They send him to Ottawa. They get Marco Scandella from the Sabres for a 4th-round pick. The Sabres then send that 4th-round pick to the Calgary Flames for Michael Frolik. I think 3 trades that sort of
make... And Frolik had to waive his no trade to go to Buffalo.
But you knew he wanted to be out of Calgary for a while now. It seems to be reasonable trades for all 3 sides. The Sabres acquire, they acquire a veteran forward, which is what they were looking for. They just lost the NHL's leading rookie goal scorer, Victor Olofsson, for 5 to 6 weeks. So they needed a forward.
That's a big loss.
It's a huge loss for the Sabres. They needed a forward. They get it from Frolik. They had an extra defenseman. They get rid of Scandella. He goes to Montreal. Logical moves all around.
Yeah, and let's not forget about Jeff Skinner. I mean, Jeff Skinner's out of the lineup right now too, right? So, I mean, the Sabres needed a veteran body, right? And Michael Frolik had kind of fallen out of favor there in Calgary, right? So, that's what was coming out of Calgary is that, this is a fresh opportunity for Frolik. You know, he's in the last year of his contract, I believe. So this is an opportunity for him to have an increased role, kind of similar to when he went from Winnipeg to Calgary, right? Because he was a pretty big factor on that 3M line, right? Michael Backlund and Matthew Tkachuk, but, you know, other players have passed him there in Calgary on the depth chart, so it makes a lot of sense. I mean, Mike Riley wasn't playing a lot in Montreal. Marco Scandella is going to be now a guy that probably usurps Brett Kulak on that left side, so that makes a lot of sense for Montreal. They get better on the left side, so all of these trades make a lot of sense. I don't think they move the needle.
No.
Like, to me, Buffalo and Montreal are not going to be playoff teams. We know Ottawa's definitely not going to be a playoff team. I mean, Montreal, you know, talking about, you know, how many wins a team's going to need, I mean, you know, Montreal's in tough because you got to pass teams like, you know, Columbus and Philadelphia, right, Dave? So, I mean, all these trades make a lot of sense. And again, like, Frolik is still a serviceable player. He's not the same player that he was, you know, a couple of years ago. You know, he slowed down a little bit, but I think he can definitely help out the Sabres.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Into Pittsburgh, Jake Guentzel, you lose him for
horrible. Well,
probably the rest of the season, barring a long playoff run.
They called it the rest of the season.
Yeah, okay. 4 to 6 months with a shoulder injury for Jake Guentzel.
That is just devastating. And Obviously, guys, Sidney Crosby is skating again, so he's going to come back. You know, he's dealing with that, you know, kind of, I guess, post hernia surgery, right? It's hard to believe, but, you know, Crosby's been out of the lineup for almost 2 months. Obviously, you know, other players like Evgeny Malkin and Brian Rust have picked up the slack.
Well,
but
Guentzel's picked up the slack. He's been their leading scorer.
Well, yeah, and, you know, Guentzel's been good for a few years now, Drew, but, you know, this is an opportunity for, like, an Alex Galchenyuk, Patrick Hornquist, these types of players to kind of pick up the slack. For a guy like Jake Guentzel. But, you know, Pittsburgh, I think, has been a team that hasn't been talked about enough when you consider all of the injuries and the division that they play in, arguably the toughest division in the leagues. But, you know, that's just tough for Jake Guentzel, who was on pace for a career year.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact, to your point, Ezzy, the fact that Pittsburgh's able to do this and still be in a playoff spot, sitting third in the division, 6 points up on the Panthers, who are currently out of playoffs right now, I mean, that is remarkable. And these guys can stay in the fight for the entire playoffs, considering the number of injuries they've had and who they've had injured. Again, you know, you could have a lot of guys injured who are role players, but when you have major guys like Sidney Crosby, Guentzel, it's like the list goes on and on. I mean, the fact that Pittsburgh has managed to do what they've done is very impressive.
That's it for the Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. A big thank you to all of our guests for joining us. You heard earlier in the program from Scott Billick, Anthony LaPanta. We were also joined by Mark Dumont and Marissa Ingemi. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on illegalcurve.com. It's available on tsn1290.ca. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to us, rate us, review us, let us know what you think of the program. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. For producer Chris Curry doing a great job behind the board, for Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio. 1290.